Hello and welcome, dear music lovers. I'm happy that you could once again join me for another musical adventure in the program about music. In a previous program, I mentioned that I have identified 7 ways in which your listening experience is enhanced with the knowledge of musical architecture, which has to do with how composition is structured. I mentioned that the first of the 7 ways in which your listening experience is enhanced is that knowing the structure of a piece allows you to recognize the composer's artistry and the composer's thoughts behind the music. Understanding what the composer intended can deepen your appreciation of the composition and the composer's creative choices. We explored 3 forms related to song. The first song form was through composed, where the singer and writer are telling a story. The composer's creative choices for the story to be continuous in order to have its dramatic impact, so the composer does not keep repeating material which would hold up the action. The music and text change throughout the piece without repeating the same music for each verse. We used Bohemian Rhapsody as an example. Then we looked at strophic, which is the favored way for setting poetry to music. This type of poem is where verses or stanzas follow a specific pattern. Each stanza contains the same number of lines and follows the same rhyming scheme. In songs, each stanza corresponds to a musical section or verse, and each verse has the same melody. The composer's reason for repeating the melody is that the melody becomes instantly recognizable. The story still moves along without interruptions, and it's easily grasped, and the music feels comfortable. It's easy to sing along. We used Amazing Grace as an example. The third song form was verse and chorus structure. The verses move the story along, and the chorus or refrain usually repeats the same words each time. The strength of this choice of form by the composer is that it drives home a message by repeating it many times. So this form is the favorite of rousing music, such as hymns, anthems, school songs, propaganda, celebrations, and any music where the aim is to engage the emotions of the listeners. This structure allows the congregation to easily sing along as they become familiar with the repeated chorus. The chorus acts as a musical and textual anchor, providing a sense of unity and allowing the congregation to join in easily during worship. Here we use the hymn All Things Bright and Beautiful as the example, but I could have chosen virtually any hymn or anthem. The verse and chorus structure is also very frequently used in popular music, as the repeated refrain makes the words and music easily memorable. From a compositional point of view, it is the easiest musical form to work with, and can deliver the greatest impact in a short space of time. Hank Williams famously said that any song that takes more than 20 minutes to write down isn't going to be any good. Schubert may have disagreed, but it is known that he wrote down complete songs in remarkably short time. "I compose every morning, and when one piece is done, I begin another," said the man who wrote about 1,500 compositions, of which over 600 were songs, in his short life of 31 years. Starting at the age of 13, that's a new composition every 4 days, many of which were large multi-movement works. This man was so poor that he never in his life owned a piano, and he relied on friends for manuscript paper. I'm reading a thriller by Jeffrey Deaver at the moment. It is called XO, and is set against the background of country and western music. At the end, he has the full text of 11 songs he refers to in the book. As far as I can tell, these are poems specifically written for the book, but if you glance at them, you will see that every one is in verse and chorus format. The words of the chorus are not written out, simply indicated by the word chorus between the verses. In terms of instrumental music, none of the above 3 forms is really usable, because without the words to anchor the music would make no sense. The through-composed form can and has been used, but it can be challenging for a listener to understand, unless the piece is very short, in other words just 1 or 2 phrases. Here are some examples from the Preludes of Chopin, which are all relatively short pieces. ¶¶ The other way in which a through composed non-vocal piece can work is if there is a story attached to it. In The Sunken Cathedral, Debussy carefully crafts a continuous musical narrative with minimum repetition. The music unfolds organically, taking the listener on a journey through different musical ideas, motives, and textures. The piece is about 7 minutes in duration and maintains a sense of unity and coherence throughout, despite its non-repetitive nature.
Thank you.
The sunken cathedral serves as an excellent example of how through composed music can captivate listeners by offering a seamless flow of musical ideas without relying on conventional repetitions. Debussy's Sunken Cathedral showcases the expressive possibilities of through composed music, allowing the composer to tell a compelling story and evoke powerful emotions through its unique and imaginative structure. The Planets by Gustav Holst is another example of works that seem to defy analysis. These seven items, which exclude Earth and Pluto, which was not yet discovered, are extremely complex pieces in terms of organization, mostly built on patterns which are not our usual idea of a melody. As such, they are subject to differing opinions about their structure, so much so that university theses have been written about them. We are going to listen to the movement Neptune the Mystic, which is about as close to through composed as we will find in orchestral music. It features only three patterns and an ending, but his use of these three patterns undergoes extensive reworking. I trust you will enjoy this piece, as unusual as it is, but it may take several hearings for you to really understand it.
Thank you.
This brings us to reason two for being interested in musical architecture: identifying patterns and themes. Understanding the structure enables you to identify recurring patterns, themes, and motifs throughout the composition. This recognition can give you a sense of cohesion and coherence within the music. Musical structure or form is determined largely by two of the elements of sound, which are pitch and duration. We could say that music structure is like these two elements in a context of time, meaning that music, unlike painting or sculpture, but like dance and drama, unfolds over a period of time. Now I'm going to take a huge leap to one of the superstructures, if I can exaggerate a little. We are now going to consider a piece which nicely divides into two halves, and within each half we have several phrases with varying degrees of strength. Each half ends with a strong pause, and I'm going to use music terminology, a strong cadence. This is a piece that we have heard twice before, so I'm going to use a different version. As is usual in this structure, each half is immediately repeated. So if I could use letters of the alphabet to describe it, let's call the first half A and the second half B. So we will hear AA, BB. I will call out the sections as we listen. Try to hear the phrases in each part, but don't stress over them. We can worry about those another time. A. Repeat of A. B. Repeat of B. What we have just listened to is called binary form. Binary form is a common musical structure used in various genres, particularly in the Baroque and classical periods. It is a two-part form denoted as AB. As binary form is generally considered to be really simple and easy, most textbooks and study guides rush over it with hardly any comment. Actually, it's not all that simple, and it is the origin of the structure which is used more than any other in large-scale compositions of the classical and romantic periods. I'm speaking of sonata form, which exists in sonatas for every instrument, concertos, trios, quartets, quintets, other small and large ensembles, overtures, and symphonies. It is worth understanding this structure well, and so I intend to spend several programs on the different features and characteristics. There are seven basic characteristics, and many others follow on as the form developed. We'll start with characteristic number one. Characteristic number one is that there are two sections. The piece is divided into two distinct sections, typically labeled as A and B. The A section is usually followed by the identical repetition of the A section, and then the B section follows with its own repetition. We just heard this in the Scarlatti that we listened to. Let's listen to another, also a sonata by Scarlatti, to reinforce this characteristic. I would like you to focus on only one thing. Listen for the AABB structure. There are very clear points of pause separating the sections. You should have no difficulty sorting them out. Thank you. The second characteristic of a binary form is that the second part frequently takes the form of an answer to the first. This would be demonstrated by the A part ending sounding like something more should follow on. Liebestraum No. 3 in A flat major by Franz Liszt is a very famous piano piece in binary form. The A section features a dreamy and poetic melody in two phrases, which is followed by the contrasting B section with a more virtuosic and passionate character. Please note how this contrasting melody is very definitely not something radically new, but it is an answer to the first part. This leads to a little cadenza, a place for the pianist to show his skill. Thereafter, this entire melody, both halves, is repeated in a far distant key of B major, significantly embroidered, but the same melodies. Then we have another cadenza which leads us back to the original key. Finally, the first half of the melody, again embroidered, and a conclusion, which we will call by its correct musical name, the coda. There are theorists who consider this composition to be in three-part form, which we will get to later. However, the essence of three-part form is that the central section is a contrasting theme and key. In this Liebestraum, there is no contrasting theme, and the change of key alone is normal for binary form, even although this key is more distant from the home key than usual. I've included this piece to illustrate that this form did not simply die out with Bach and his contemporaries, but was still very much alive and kicking. So the structure I want you to listen for is A, B, cadenza, then another A, B, cadenza, and finally A and coda. Enjoy the music, but focus only on this aspect for today. A. Thank you. The third characteristic of binary form is balance. Both sections are often of equal or similar length, contributing to a sense of symmetry and balance in the music. Back to the Chopin preludes, of which we heard some earlier, these are mostly just single ideas and worked out shortly as befits a prelude. Some of these might be considered to be binary, but I'm not convinced of that as the pieces are incredibly short and most don't display any clear point of rest or cadence dividing the sections, except possibly for numbers 12, 16, 19, 21, 22, and 24. We are going to hear 19 up to 22 now. Thank you. Dear music lovers, that's all we have time for this week. But we will continue with Binary Form in 3 weeks' time. Next week I'm intending to play the full Chopin Preludes and 5 Scarlatti Sonatas for you, so that you will have additional opportunity to hear and reflect on these works. The following week we will devote the program to the Holst Planets, of which we heard one movement today. Goodbye for now.